All right, welcome back to Talkin' Baseball alongside Bill Lasky and Marty Lurie. My name is Carey Crowley, and it's a pleasure to welcome in our next guest, great MLB.com researcher, MLB Network analyst, Sarah Lang. She has the best Twitter account in all of baseball, at Slangs on Sports. Sarah, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for that kind intro. Really appreciate it.
Well, the Twitter account was shining on the night of a no-hitter for Tyler Gilbert down in Arizona on Saturday night. Some great notes on what happened. History being made by an Arizona Diamondbacks starter. First career start, and he throws a no-hitter against the San Diego Padres team that's 10 games back of the Giants in the NL West. So many different interesting things. What caught your eye about this one?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it was so exciting. I mean, obviously, first of all, it's just such a great story, you know, a Rule 5 pick, everything else that goes along with Tyler Gilbert. But I think the go-to note, the absolute like craziest thing is that, as you mentioned, it's his first career start. He is the fourth player in MLB history to throw a no-hitter in his first career start. And I think Twitter certainly really enjoyed the names on this list. So we have Ted Breitenstein, who did that in 1891. Bumpus Jones in 1892, and Bobo Holman in 1953. So I don't know that Tyler Gilbert is quite as fun of a name. You know, he did a great thing for sure, but at least we will get to look back at that and put him in that context, which is outstanding.
Yeah, anytime you're joining Bumpus Jones, you know you've done something great in the major leagues. One thing that I found interesting was this happened against the San Diego Padres squad where Joe Musgrove was the opposing starter, and he's already thrown a no-hitter this season, one of the eight that we've seen across Major League Baseball. That's pretty rare to be involved in two, one that you threw and one that you saw your team have thrown against them.
Definitely. So he was the 12th pitcher to throw a no-hitter and have one thrown against him in a season. Last time that happened was in 2015, Jake Arrieta. But another one where we have some fun names, so I am going to run through a couple of them. The first guy to have that happen to him was Pud Galvin in 1880. And you hear that name and you're like, all right, we've got some good names on here. And then you get to 1883, someone named One Arm Daly. And if you go to Baseball Reference, it says his name is Hugh. But, you know, I work with the Elias Sports Bureau on some of this stuff. And whatever they provide, I know is official. And they called him One Arm. So I was very excited to put that out into the internet world last night.
I mean, these names make High Pockets Kelly look like nothing right now. So
exactly.
I really do appreciate this research. Another home run for Shohei Ohtani on Saturday night. This guy is just marvelous. He's a statistical wonder, whether he's on the mound, whether he's at the plate. And now 38 home runs, kind of taking a lead in this major league home run race where Vladimir Guerrero Jr. sure looked like he had a shot, and he still does, but at 35, those two have created major separation from the rest of the pack.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, even a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, I think there was a debate about the American League MVP. I don't think we have a debate anymore. And Vlad Jr. has had an amazing season. I mean, I wish for him that he was doing it in any other year because he would be a slam dunk MVP. But everything that Shohei Ohtani is doing, you know, he's been slumping a little bit at the plate since the All-Star break, which is not a home run derby curse or anything else. It's the fact that when you're an All-Star, you get it because you had an outstanding first half and pretty much everybody returns the mean at least a little bit in the second half. But in the meantime, he's been pitching out of his mind. He has the third lowest ERA since the beginning of July, and he's just on a whole other level. And the thing that really stands out to me with Shohei Ohtani is actually that we've seen him evolve as a pitcher during the season. I mean, in that first start that he made on Sunday Night Baseball, when he hit the 451-foot home run, he was throwing 100. He's not really doing that anymore. He had that one start where he had a big velocity drop, and I think there were a lot of injury concerns and maybe a little bit of a scare there. And since then, he's been pitching more, not just throwing heat. And I don't think that we've seen that many guys do that in the middle of the season, really change their approach. By the way, while also hitting, as you said, you know, all of these home runs and doing all of that on the days that he isn't pitching. So he's just such a wonder, and we're so lucky to watch him.
It really is amazing. A fourth place Angel squad, and I can't take my eyes off that team because Shohei Ohtani has been so good this year. Talking with Sarah Langs, you can see her on MLB Network all the time. She's all over the place with great stats and notes about Major League Baseball. And one that you had earlier this week after Brandon Crawford signed his two-year, $32 million extension with the San Francisco Giants, Sarah, is how rare it is for a player Brandon Crawford's age to be enjoying the type of breakout season that he has. At the time he signed the extension, slugging .540 on the year. He's never slugged more than .400 in a season, or he has, but his career slugging percentage is under .400. And this is something that almost never happens for a player of his age.
Absolutely. So I have to give full credit on this note. Well, you know, there's credit to the Elias Sports Bureau who helped me research it, but I have to give credit to my mother, who is a Giants fan, who was here with me the day that that happened and actually asked me, hey, you know, how often do we see a guy at that age have a career year like this? So that sort of set me down a rabbit hole, and I ended up looking into guys to slug at least .500 in a season at age 34 or older who entered that season with a career slugging percentage under .400. So as you said, you know, he had a .392 career slugging percentage entering 2021. He's at .540 right now. We'll see where he ends up. So he isn't on the list until the season ends. But if he were to join this list, he would be joining Brett Gardner in 2019, who slugged .503. He entered at .390. Louis Polonia in 1999, who slugged .526 after entering at .370 on his career, and Jerry Mumphrey in 1987, who slugged .534. He had a .390 career slugging percentage. So, you know, the thing that stands out there is that Crawford is on pace to actually outslug any of them and have the highest slugging percentage that we've seen from a guy at this age who entered with really no prior track record of slugging like this. And I just think it's really incredible to see what he's been doing, and it is very rare to see a career year at this age. You know, Buster Posey is in a different boat. He's already been an MVP, so he's having a great year, but he's done it before. But Crawford's best year was what we thought was probably his best power year ever until we saw everything this year that we've seen.
Well, credit to your mom. On this show, we love mothers who are big Giants fans, so appreciate her for that one. One other note that I found really interesting this week, Sarah, was the Field of Dreams game when you had the Yankees and the White Sox, and what a tremendous game that was. You know, even aside from the setting, you play that game in New York, you play that game in Chicago, and it's one of the best we've seen all season. Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton both homered in that game for the Yankees, yet they still lost, and that's a rarity because the White Sox were able to come back. Tim Anderson hitting the walk-off, and just so many different notes emerge from that game that really tell the story of baseball and tell the story of baseball in 2021.
Definitely. I mean, you know, entering that game, the Yankees were 11-0 when Judge and Stanton homered for them in the same game, including the playoffs. And the first thing that jumps out to me with that number is that they've had Giancarlo Stanton since the start of the 2018 season, and I think we would all expect that there would have been more games where they both homer, but of course Stanton has been hurt for a lot of the time that he's been on the Yankees, and Judge also missed some time, especially in the last 2 years due to injury. So they were 11-0 when those two guys both homered, and they didn't just homer in the same game, they homered in the same inning off of Liam Hendricks, obviously very, very dramatic in that top in the ninth inning. But then Tim Anderson came in with the walk-off home run and handed the Yankees their first loss like that since they've had those two guys on the team. And my favorite note that came out of it was actually from Doug Kern, who's a former ESPN Stats Info colleague of mine, actually. It was the 15th walk-off home run by a White Sox player against the Yankees, which sounds very specific, but the very cool part is that the first one was by Shoeless Joe Jackson. So that really put together all of the storylines that we've been following with the Field of Dreams and these two teams and everything else. And, you know, there was so much about that game that really just couldn't have been scripted any better. And it is pretty crazy for that to end up the result and that you have that historical tie to Shoeless Joe as well.
Doesn't get better than that. Hey, Sarah, one more for you before we let you go here. Not a statistical-driven question, but I'm curious how your analysis of this NL West race has changed over the last month or so. The Giants 4 games up on the Dodgers. The Padres now 10 games back, but still in a wild card position. How do you think this shakes out down the stretch?
It's really interesting. You know, I mean, I think that every single day, my belief that the Giants can sustain what they're doing grows even more. I mean, they've shown at this point, we are so far past the, oh, this is going to fade. I mean, this is who they are. And they're a really good team. I mean, Fangraphs playoff odds do still have the Dodgers winning. I think a lot of that, winning the division, I should say, I think a lot of that has to do with projections about Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger, which to this point haven't really come to fruition. And of course, Betts is on the injured list right now. I think that the Giants, I mean, it really seems like they're going to win this division. And, you know, the thing that has really changed for me in the last month is actually just the view of the Padres. I know Fernando Tatis Jr. is out right now, expected to come back soon, and we'll see exactly what level he's at playing after that shoulder injury or re-aggravating the shoulder injury. But the Padres have not looked good. Of course, they got no hit last night, so they're particularly not looking good. But I think that the holes on that team have really been magnified in the last month. So it's certainly the Dodgers and Giants in a class of their own in the NL West, which is not at all what we were expecting entering the year. But I'm really interested to see if we do get those three teams or if the Reds, who have looked a lot better lately, actually surpass the Padres for that second wild card spot.
Well, Sarah Langs, you are in a class of your own when it comes to the notes and the stats that make this game so enjoyable for us. So thank you so much for joining us here on Talkin' Baseball. We will be sure to follow you on Twitter at SlangsOnSports and watch you, read you wherever you're at on MLB and MLB Network.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. A lot more coming up next. Giants pregame, Marty, Carrie, and Bill. You're listening to KMBR 104.5, 680, the sports leader.